Hi, I'm Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen. I'm a personal functional medicine practitioner for high performers and professional athletes. And I've worked with athletes in many different sports, from the U.S. sailing team to endurance sports and triathlon, CrossFit, and professional tennis players across the board in any sport. Maintaining a foundation of a healthy body and mind is crucial for long-term success. This is the podcast that will show you how to apply the principles of a healthy body and mindset to achieve high performance, all from the inside out. This is the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. I am so excited to have you. I'm Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen, and I have a great guest with us today, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But I do also have an announcement, couple of things. Number one, we have a new guide that I created that is all about helping you to master some of the things that we've talked about a lot on this podcast. If you're new, we talk about five in particular things that steps that you can do to help with recovery, to help with performance, getting to what I call getting to the finish line strong, which if you're not in triathlon or marathon, that's okay. It does, in some ways, it is geared a little bit towards the endurance athlete. But if you are in any sport, there are many different aspects of this guide that are very, very helpful for athletes. So we talk about inflammation, we talk about GI health, we talk about nutrient deficiencies, we talk about recovery and sleep, we talk about fueling and hydration in there as well. So there's a lot of aspects to the guide that are all about giving you your first steps to, first off, being able to perform really well, but also if there's an injury or a illness, or if there's something that's just holding you back from being able to really perform at the level you want to be able to perform at, this guide is a very good place to start. And it is essentially a start as far as what I work my one-on-one clients through together. So you can find that at drkirsten.com/finishstrong and grab that for yourself. So let's get into the episode. I have Allison Marie Helms. She has her PhD with us today on the show. She is a women's strength and running coach and a creator of the Women's Running Academy. After struggling with her own return to running postpartum, Allison made it her mission to empower and educate herself and others to train with purpose, respect, and understanding of their bodies through the continuum of pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond. But you'll also hear on this podcast that she doesn't just focus on postpartum. She really is centered and focused on helping runners be able to run very well. And she does that through strength training. She's also a certified personal trainer and running coach, and also a pregnancy postpartum corrective exercise specialist. In addition to her fitness expertise and experience, Allison Marie holds a doctorate in chemical engineering from Georgia Tech. She has taught everything from sixth grade science through collegiate level engineering courses, and her efficient scientific approach and passion for education help her to break complex ideas down into the simplest form of what actually works and in a way that you are actually going to do it. Allison has been featured in a variety of media outlets, including Fitfluential, Not Your Typical Mom Podcast, The Life Boss Podcast, Runner Moms Podcast, and Shape Magazine. So without further ado, I am excited for you to jump into this episode, and I hope that you enjoy it as much as we did. Hi, Allison. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you today. So tell us a little bit about how you got into strength training, running. What's your background as far as those things go?
Running happened first a long time before strength training. I actually started running with my mom when I was young, like 9 or 10, with her and her like running friends. She is the woman who has like this group of friends and that group of friends and that group of friends. And she had her running friends. Okay. And I would just kind of go with them as my like mom time without the rest of the siblings. So got into doing some races with her and just continued on it through high school and just competitively. And then in in college to kind of focus more on academics, but still ran on the side. Got really back into it in grad school with running half marathons and, you know, famous last words. I was like, oh, sure, you know, I'll run a half and I'm drawing the line at a full. And then you catch the bug and the rest is kind of history and the running saga there. Many, many, many more years of training. I got into the strength training side, and this is kind of where the postpartum conversation sort of comes into what I do after having my first son, who's almost nine. Just running did not feel good anymore. I used to just be able to, it never felt like, you know, I did the ice baths and ibuprofen and just like was able to quell it before, but it sort of all just kind of reared its ugly head after having babies, back pain, pelvic floor issues, hip stuff. And I just went down a long rabbit hole of trying to figure it all out. I think there, in just pure strength building, there's some nuance to it and understanding of the unique needs in your body for sure, but pure strength building goes a long way and went a long way in terms of mitigating my symptoms and building more like resiliency into my body as a runner.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh my gosh, took me a long time to get there.
Yeah, I know. Well, and strength training too isn't really one of those things that runners have a tendency to like automatically include. Yeah, I've learned from a lot of people who are like, oh my gosh, strength training is so important, that they had some sort of reason that got them to like have to figure out that they needed strength training.
Yeah. And I sort of look at it as, and I talk about this in, again, in the postpartum world more, just because it comes up a lot. Like it reveals the invisible ink that's already there. There's little inefficiency that our bodies have that may be a stressor. That stressor can be excessive training or building up your volume too fast or something like that. Or that stressor can be something like pregnancy that reveals that ink. And then when we take the time to work on the foundations to improve those symptoms, it actually can make us better athletes overall. It just, we wouldn't necessarily have taken that time unless we need to, because we just want to run, right?
yeah, exactly. So as far as like from maybe like a body physiological standpoint, like why is strength training so important for runners?
So to me, strength is resiliency. Strength is stability. Strength is power. It's all the things that you like need to get through your stride. And if we think about the biomechanical forces on your body with running, they're huge. And yes, we can build some strength through running. The cardiovascular gains tend to happen faster than our like muscular fitness gains. And oftentimes runners get into trouble there by like, you know, feeling good and we're training cardiovascularly, and then we push past where our body is like physically ready to go. So like just at its simplest form, strength training can help capitalize on those cardiovascular gains faster, like help that lagging end of the system build up so that you can get more out of all of the gains you're making with your running programming, like progressing your mileage there. We can kind of like push it along with the strength training.
Totally. On the flip side or note of that, one of the things that I learned through triathlon was that when I was spending a lot of time on the bike, my running improved. And I was also doing strength training, of course, on top of that. But that was one thing that I started learning, like, oh, more running doesn't always mean
better
running.
Yeah. Doing something different with your body just goes a long way. That running is a very repetitive motion. So if we do other things that work on our strength, that work on our cardiovascular fitness alongside with it, like it can only improve. I mean, yeah. Obviously, if there's this point where you layer on too much and you're doing too much and then you're not resting, and
yes,
that's the another extreme end of the problem. But yeah, I've heard that so many times. There's a local to me, there's a University Furman University, and they have it's called FIRST. I never remember what it stands for, but it's a running research institute at Furman, and the people who work there kind of created their methodology partly because they started to get into triathlons and they were worried that it would negatively affect their running. And then, you know, they started pulling back on their running days so that they could do, and they only saw improvements in the running.
So crazy. Okay. So what are some of the reasons why runners tend to resist strength training?
They just want to run. Yeah. Mostly just, they don't want to, they just want to run and have this, like, just starting this fear, or not necessarily fear, but just like notion that doing strength training is going to take away from their precious time that they have to run, which is a real thing, especially for busy adults. I didn't necessarily have that worry as much when I was younger. Then it was just more, I wasn't informed. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge part of it too. You just don't, if you don't have that experience, like we talked about, that stressor that requires you to need it, you never even feel the benefits of it in the first place and just don't know to do it. And I think that can be a huge part of it. So it's like not really wanting to, but also not really having ever felt the benefits of doing it, and got lucky, hasn't really needed it yet. And then the other side of it is, I hear sometimes, I'm afraid that the strength training is going to make me too sore to run. And you know, every time I get into strength training, I'm too sore to do my runs, and so I stop. And I mean, yeah, that's probably going to happen the first couple of weeks you get into strength training, because your body's not used to it. You're introducing a new stressor into the equation. But just like you do with your running, you when you start, it's hard. You know, a mile might feel hard when you first start. Weeks, months later, a mile feels like nothing, and you build. Same thing with strength training. It takes a little bit of time to, and off also, some runners will get in and be like, I'm going to do this strength training and like do it all, because that's how we roll. and then, yeah, of course you're going to be sore. But I think ultimately it's even the runners who have realized how important strength training is, it's still just not what we love. And when given the choice between, I only have this much time in the day, in the week to train, I want a lot of it to be running.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. It also seems like maybe some of the barriers as well, and you can maybe speak to this too, for runners, is like running is just easy in the sense of like, you can just literally go for a run. Whereas like for strength training, some don't have access to dumbbells and kettlebells and other types of things at home. So they have to go to a gym. And if that's not something that they necessarily have access to, I think that's one barrier, at least that I've seen, that is a common one.
Yeah.
At least for
running. Yeah, that's huge too. And that's why when I create my programs and everything, mostly like, are things that you can do at home with very little equipment, dumbbells, a couple of resistance bands. But also I provide, like, if you don't have dumbbells, here's some ideas of what you can do to like create resistance and those kinds of things too. Yeah. Because I don't want that to be a barrier. And I think there is something to, you know, a lot of runners will also do or trend more towards like the high rep, more high intensity interval style strength training, body weight stuff, where yes, that does kind of overcome the barrier that you're talking about, but it's, in my opinion, kind of like same. You're already doing that with running. The strength training that we really need to supplement the running does in some ways require adding resistance. And yeah, that can be hard without a gym to go to.
Okay. I want to dive into that a little bit more, because we just started in on a topic of strength training that I think gets confusing sometimes. First off, before I jump into that though, I just wanted to say, and we'll give all the links and stuff to all of your things and Instagram and all the stuff, but your Instagram is one that I just absolutely love to follow, because you show so many different types of exercises that can be done at home that are, it's very clear that this is something you can include in your normal routine, even if you don't necessarily have access to a gym. And I just feel like you do a really good job at showing that. So for everybody that's listening, I highly recommend you go and check her out, and the links we'll talk about that at the end. But when we're talking about strength training programs, like I've seen and heard, and I've actually had some people on the podcast as well talking about a lot of different types of things as far as strength training goes, and it can look very different. It can look like Olympic weightlifting and like heavy weights, and then there can be this like banded work and single leg work and this sort of, you know, kind of essence of things that you could potentially do at home. Can you talk to that a little bit as far as like the different types of strength training programs that are out there, and what maybe a good strength training program could look like?
So yeah, there's a large variety of different strength training programs. Yeah. And I find a lot of the ones that are geared towards runners tend to be more of the banded work, the single leg stuff, the lighter dumbbells, the higher reps. There's nothing necessarily wrong with those things. They can be part of it. But for runners, what I like to see included, and I don't know if this is necessarily like answering your question, but what I like to see included in terms of like types of strength training is some more purposeful, slower, heavier weights. Now, I'm not saying jump into like Olympic weightlifting right away or ever. I don't think you have to do that. But progressing to a place where maybe you start at 3 sets of 10 reps with a weight that feels comfortable for you, hard but comfortable, and then eventually progress to like 5x5, where you can only do 5 reps with that particular resistance. That's where we really talk about and can get into the strength building that we need to support the running. The single leg stuff, I mean, that plays, I usually put in that with like accessory work to supplement the higher resistance strength stuff is very important, of course, because running is a single leg activity. Really, we need to include those things. The banded work, I'm not a huge fan of band around the knees type stuff for everybody. And if you follow my Instagram, you've kind of probably seen that at this point. But when I say banded stuff, I use bands a lot more the upper body for runners to get that, because it's a reciprocal motion, and get that thoracic rotation with banded upper body rows or presses and that kind of thing. I guess there's a lot of things that can be included. The important thing to know, there's not like one that is the best. Like Olympic weightlifting may be fine for some runners. It's not necessarily to get there for everybody. But not being afraid to like do some real strength training with like heavier weights that feel hard to lift. I think that's the huge part of it. And then also plyometric work. I will kind of lump in with the strength training
stuff. Can you just expand on plyometric work really quickly?
Sure. So, I mean, we normally think of, I don't actually know what everybody normally thinks of when plyometric work.
Exactly.
Think of things like with like box jumps and that kind of thing, but also like things that I was very afraid to do for a long time. They did not feel good in my body. The idea of like jumping up onto a box was something that scared me, which is crazy because I would do trail running and jump and run all the time, but just doing it in this other setting felt really uncomfortable. It's about training, you know, if we kind of pull it back. It's about training your body to absorb and produce force. So there's two kind of sides to plyometric work that I look at now. Training your body to land effectively and distribute that force evenly throughout the body, like jumping off a box. You know, some runners will be like, oh man, like that really hurts my knees. It might if that's where you start, but if we build up to it slowly and get your body to learn to absorb those ground reaction forces, like that's what running is. The whole landing and loading into mid stance, yes, that's what running is. And then the second half is the production of power. So doing, you know, instead of jumping off a box, jumping onto a box, box jumps, or like tuck jumps, or just any kind of jumping and producing power. That's what the second half of the running stride is, just, you know, in bigger, more dynamic looking forms. So we need to practice that. Just like, you know, just like I said, doing high intensity, lots of reps, low weight isn't what we really need, because we want to practice like the bigger, more strength. That's sort of like plyometric training is kind of the analog to that. You know, we go slow, heavy weight, build the strength. And then with the plyometric training, we are bigger, more dynamic movements to practice that loading and landing and storing energy and propulsion, instead of just like dropping into something like a wet noodle.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you for kind of expanding on that a bit, because I do find that, it's common to see, as you mentioned, like the high rep kind of, you know, type of strength training is part of like what we would consider a strength training program for runners, but it's really getting into that resistance and building that strength and that force that is what translates into you getting to like the end of a 26 mile marathon and not, this is another great post of yours, but not having to walk down the stairs backwards, which like, I know is such a like thing. Cause anytime I finished like big races, especially when I wasn't doing as much CrossFit as I was the first time when I did a first half marathon and then a half marathon, I really noticed at the end that like my joints hurt. Because I wasn't doing enough of particular types of strength training to help build through those movements. And I started learning quite a bit how important that is. And it's not just about heavy weights. It's really about the specific movements that you're going to be going through in the run over and over and over again for 13 to 26 miles. Yeah. It's really important.
Yeah. Building strength in the specific movement patterns that are related to the demands of running, which is, I mean, very much like a traditional like strength training programming plan, like our squats and our hinge patterns and our split squats, things that are pretty standard in a lot of strength training programs, but just taking the time to feel the movements instead of just go through the motions is the biggest difference, I think, from some, you know, strength training for runners, just do the thing really fast versus like, take the time, feel this, you know, understand what the movement patterns and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So there's also a really common thing that I hear, like, okay, so we need to run and then we need to do strength training and then we need to do nutrition and recovery. And then we also need to do mobility. One of the things I think where people get a little bit confused is like, where does mobility and like flexibility fall into place? And then where does strength fall into place? And you also have you touch on this as well in some of your stuff too, that there is a difference between mobility and strength. And there's also a need for strength when you have certain levels of mobility. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. So that's like mobility and strength kind of are in this weird, like chicken or the egg, like situation with each other in my brain, because deficits in strength in some places in our body can cause us to like hold tension and stiffen in other places to compensate. The body is very smart. It creates safety when we don't have it. This is in other places, potentially when we don't have it in places where we need it. So sometimes lack of mobility can be because we have lack of strength or stability somewhere else in the system. And that is, I mean, can be a nuanced conversation person to person for sure. So that's kind of like the one side of the chicken or the egg piece. And then the other end, if we think of the mobility we need to run, for example, I have three like main, four main checkpoints that I look at. One, we need to be able to dorsiflex at the ankle so that we can move across from, you know, mid stance into toe off. We need to be able to dorsiflex at the big toe so that we can get into the full expression of toe off and get an efficient toe off. And we need to have enough mobility in the hip flexors so that we can move into full hip extension to get that toe off. And those things are all like connected to each other. The fourth one is more like rib mobility so that we can rotate. That one's kind of like on its side. So let's just kind of talk about those three for a second. Yeah. If we have enough of those, enough ankle dorsiflexion, enough big toe dorsiflexion, enough hip flexor range of motion, we don't necessarily need to stretch anymore, gain more mobility to be able to perform the task of running. And then potentially, if we stretch, if we go towards the end of trying to create more mobility, we need to layer on strength on top of that so that we can handle it. So with my more like bendy people who have a lot more mobility, their problem is handling it. Their body can't handle the ranges that we own, that they, you know, that they have. They don't own it. So there's like those, the two extremes. So we do want like a balance. We need enough mobility. And, you know, when we have enough, just focusing on strength training from in good full range of motion with good mechanics, that's all we really need. If we don't have enough, then things like mobility training or flexibility or stretching may be needed. But again, coming back to that first thing I mentioned is the question, because why is it tight? Why is this part of my body not mobile? And a lot of times it comes back to one, you know, holding tension, creating stability there because you don't have it somewhere else. And then the other piece is, I like to think of it as like, what position is your body in? So if we just think of someone who has like a really big like arch in their low back and their pelvis is sort of like dumping forward, well, their hamstrings are going to feel tight and mobile because they're already stretched out like crazy. Yeah. Their hip flexors are going to feel overworked and tight because they're constantly in this shortened, tensioned position. Their low back is going to feel tight because they're constantly in this arch. So it's not about those muscles being tight, but they're tight because of the position that they're in all the time.
Yeah.
And then again, that's, it can be kind of nuanced and person to person, but figuring out with some very specific positions in your strength training to get you to like, I'd say like own your orientation. So orientation is what I'm talking about there. Like, you know, having a pelvis forward, you know, you're just not having a good like stack of your body, rib cage over pelvis, over your feet, shoulders on top kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of wonky somewhere in the posture.
Yeah.
And that will just affect your mobility overall, but just pure stretching or mobility training is never going to like solve that. It needs to go like a layer deeper.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we covered that, because there's so much, you know, to being able to like be able to play any sport or do any type of like exercise training, anything like that. Well, to be in it for the longevity and to be able to also not just think about longevity, but also healthy tissues and healthy joints and a healthy body. You have to manage both of those. And that's ultimately like what we're talking about here is like, we want to keep you moving. We want to keep you performing well. And like, you know, I don't know that many people that like train or exercise and don't necessarily want to get better, you know, like they don't maybe need to be like the best, but you know, we do want to see some improvements. Right. And yeah. I think there's a lot of balance here that having both healthy tissues and mobility and strength and a balance of both really helps to create that for anybody who's, you know, running or doing any type of training.
Yeah. When you say healthy tissue, like just make it, if you kind of like pull this full circle about how, you know, strength is resiliency and working on these, like this strength and mobility and getting to the point where you move more efficiently through your stride, that will help the forces load more like efficiently through your body. So I think of it all as like minimizing energy leaks. So energy leaks are energy that you can't use to move forward. So strength is energy efficiency. But energy leaks are also if it's leaking somewhere in the chain, that means it's getting distributed into your joints inefficiently somewhere in the chain. And that's where we have like the aches and the pains and all those things creep up. And then with repetitive wear and tear, then we can do some more long-term damage.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that picture, that analogy of like that you can literally have energy leaks. And so much of what we do too is about building resiliency, but also efficiency.
And they go, I think you can't have one without the other.
No. Yeah, totally. totally. And I talk about resiliency in a lot of different ways. Like I talk about, you know, your resiliency to fatigue, and I talk about, you know, keeping also your immune system resiliency. And I talk about that on the other side of things, but there's also this idea that you're talking about here that I love, that is that you can also build resiliency in your joints and in your tissues that helps to prevent things like injuries and stuff that are absolutely preventable. Yeah. Like there's some that aren't, but there are a decent amount of injuries that can be prevented.
So. I mean, I don't like to use the term prevented, honestly, just because you can't like, I get a little bit like, feel some kind of way about terms like preventing energy or like injury or like bulletproofing your body, because like those things are going to happen. We can make them less probable. We can make your body more resilient and adaptable, so that you can come back faster. We can give you the tools to like manage, but like we can never fully prevent it. And I feel like sometimes just saying that we can just sets you up for failure, because then when you do get injured, like, oh, I suck. Like, what am I doing wrong?
Sure, sure, you know, sure.
I'm doing all the things right, and I'm still getting injured. It can be frustrating. I mean, sport can set you up for injury, and that's just kind of like part of it sometimes. But we can mitigate and we can make it less probable with smart training for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
And fueling. Definitely. Rest all those things.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so this is a fun one that I pulled actually from your Instagram. And you made a post about the difference between a proactive versus a reactive runner. Can you explain the difference between the two? Because I feel like that's such a great example of really what we're talking about in some ways.
Yeah.
In this episode.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was really just talking about with that. Yeah. It's like a reactive runner will take every setback really to heart and take it personally and, you know, feel like there's something wrong and, you know, or this plan is not working, or just like everything, throw everything away. Yeah. Because it didn't work and it was start over, and maybe I'm not meant to do this, or I'm just slow, or, you know, my body isn't meant for running and all that kind of things, and send you down that spiral, versus a like proactive runner will take all of that as information, and an opportunity to learn and build and get stronger. Every like little failure or struggle is information. And I tell my clients this like all the time when I first, especially in those first few months when we start working together, like it's, I'm not going to like know all the things your body needs right off the bat. That's just not, I mean, I do have my assessment process and I can get to like a good place to start, mm-hmm. but there's feedback, there's trial and error. I don't know if I love that term, so to speak, but like, there's a learning.
Yes.
That happens. And that's how you get stronger. That's how you make progress. And all the things that don't go right are also part of that, and information to feed the system.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I talk about this a lot too. I give a common example of when I was working with a mentor, and looking at working with some NFL football players. And one of the things that we saw is like, as they went through their season, so we would pull labs at like the beginning, the middle, and the end of their season. And one of the things you just see is their vitamin C just like tanks throughout the season. But one of the things that we found is that the ones that were proactive, right? The ones that were getting these labs run and trying to mitigate some of those losses there, if they did get injured, which again leads to that, like we can reduce the probability or the risk of an injury, but we can't necessarily say for sure that we can completely prevent injuries. But the ones that did, if they needed surgery, if they were being proactive and getting that vitamin and getting at least some vitamin C in throughout their season and just doing what they could to mitigate that a bit, their recovery on the flip side was so much faster than ones who weren't really doing anything. And so I just loved that idea of like that proactive versus reactive athlete, because it just has a lot of benefits. And it, you know, even though life happens, I would say you can sometimes bounce back a lot faster, or just have a different mindset around when things happen as they kind of naturally are going to happen.
Yeah. I had another post recently along the same lines that seemed to really resonate with people. It's like, there's no starting over. Yes. And I showed a spiral instead of a circle. So even when you like hit roadblocks and you feel like you're starting over, that you circled back, if you think about it happening more as a spiral, you're constantly growing and learning. You have more tools, you have more experience under your belt. So even if it feels like, oh, I'm back at square one as far as like my mileage, I've had a lot of people feeling this way returning to running after COVID. Like, but think you, though, all the work that you put in before, it still means something.
Yeah.
And it's going, like, you have to trust in that training as well. And there's no starting over. It's a spiral.
Right. I love that too. Cause I mean, we forget as well sometimes that like what you did before laid a lot of like neurons and a lot of I think that would be the right word, plasticity in the brain, that like, it's like muscle memory in the sense of riding a bike. It comes back so much faster the next year or the next season you get on a bike, because you've laid down that learning a while ago. And so it'll come back faster. And so, yeah, I love that. That's a great, it's not necessarily starting over. It's more of like a spiral. That's a great image.
I can't take credit for the image. It was from her Seasonal Intentions, I think, is her Instagram. I learned it from her, but.
I love that.
Put my running training spin on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Awesome. Well, this has been amazing. I know that this is going to be helpful for somebody out there, I'm sure. Did you have anything else that you wanted that we didn't talk about today that you wanted to cover?
I could talk about this stuff all day.
I know I could too.
But no, I mean, nothing like pressing that absolutely needs to be said. It just like if you're someone, I did a work my first in-person workshop in a very long time this past weekend, just because of like life and COVID. Yeah. And we actually lived in an RV for a couple of years before the whole like COVID thing. So like right when I got back into like living in a place where I could actually like meet people, it was like, no, you cannot meet people. It's COVID time. So anyway, that was a total aside, but we did a strength training workshop in person. And I asked them like, how many of you regularly strength train? And like two hands went up. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be overwhelming. And you feel like there's a lot of things we talked about as far as strength training today, and you don't have to do all of them from day one. Just pick like one little thing to start integrating, build in like one day, 10 or 15 minutes here, and then build on it. Yes, there are best practices, but you don't have to be doing all of the best practices at once on the first day that you do them. Totally. And it will take time, just like it did with your running. You started somewhere and you progressed over time. The same thing with strength training.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to start.
Absolutely. So where can they find you on Instagram if they want to learn more and come say hello?
My Instagram, everything, all
or
my
social media. Did I say
everywhere
Instagram?
Is
I meant social media. Well,
I mean, that's where I go all the time. I mean, I have a Facebook, but it's pretty much my Instagram stuff shared again. It's Allison Marie PhD for everything. So it's Allison with one L. So A-L-I. That's my Instagram handle. That's on Facebook. That's my website. You can find me in all those places.
And I will put the links below. Also though, too, is there your Run Strong programs are great. And I've actually checked out at least one of them so far. If they are interested, do you have like an email list or do you have like a freebie or anything for people that you want to share?
So I have a few resources on everything's usually in my Instagram links. That's the easiest place to like find everything that I'm currently offering. The Instagram link will have everything there. In terms of free resources, it's actually coming out next week. So I think by the time I'm re-releasing it next week. So by the time this airs, I have a 7-day glute accelerator strength training course. It's just like one exercise a day just to get a taste of it. And it will, circling back to the fact that I don't like everything with bands around the knees and strengthening, that will kind of give you the clues into why and how we can really more functionally strength train the glutes. And that's free. That will sort of give you a taste and introduce you to some of the other things that I
offer. Amazing. Okay. Well, I will make sure to link that. Thank you so much for being here. This was so great. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Okay, everybody. So have a great rest of your day, and we will see you next week with another episode. Take care.
Hey, did you know that up to 70% of athletes may be deficient in at least one micronutrient, if not potentially deficient in two or more? Micronutrient deficiencies like vitamin D, iron, calcium, vitamin E, B12, B9 are super common in athletes, and they can lead to things like fatigue. They can lead to injuries and fractures, getting sick a lot and missing practice, to unexplained pain and a lot more. On the flip side though, athletes who corrected nutrient deficiencies saw improvements in VO2 max, vertical jump, grip strength, force, improved delayed onset muscle soreness, and a lot more. That's why I created the Strong to the Finish Line free guide for athletes like you to be able to train and compete symptom-free so that you can have the confidence and the power to perform at your best. Get this guide for free at drkirsten.com/finishstrong.